There are very few things that investors can do that are free. But what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, saving strategies, financial planning, topical items of interest, and maybe even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to Free Lunch, hosted by the CM Group. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty to help clients achieve their vision through a deep understanding of what is important to them that requires planning, money, and time. Learn more and subscribe today at markets-work.com.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast with Greg and Colin. Greg, last week we had Paul, is it Reese?
Reese
from PIMCO join us to discuss the current state of the fixed income markets. I don't think a lot of people understand the fixed income markets personally.
I hope that after we've done so many podcasts talking about fixed income, that certainly I hope that listeners are getting a better handle on it. But I think you're right. Everybody believes they understand the stock market, and not as many believe they understand or do understand the fixed income market.
Yeah, and the global fixed income market is almost twice the size of the global stock market.
Yeah.
It's a massive market.
Exactly.
And it's important to understand these different markets, that being all markets. So as you say, the equity market, which gets all of the hype all the time, but the fixed income market, the cash market, foreign exchange, real estate, etc., all kinds of markets. Well, anything you want to buy has a market. So we spend a lot of time following these markets and being educated on them. And the reason for that is we want to have a better understanding of things like how the economy is affecting the markets and vice versa. Because ultimately, this leads to how our clients are impacted, be it positively or negatively at different times in their investment portfolios. And those portfolios are linked to these things that I like to call goals.
And for that, you have to have reasonably good returns for your clients. That's just table stakes. Clients expect a return, and as we've talked, and we will talk later in this episode, relative returns are very important. But they expect returns, and most goals are linked to some estimated rate of return on the investments. But what about the other stuff? So we've got a bit of a different topic to explore today, the significance of service in our profession, the investment profession.
Before we get into this, where this idea for this episode came from was I had gone out for dinner with my wife and we received excellent service. I told you about it.
You did.
It just struck a chord because, as you say, the investments are required. The rate of return is necessary, but there's so much more to it than that. It's not just about the numbers. It's about the people behind those numbers and the impact that they can make on the lives of others.
What does service mean when it comes to investing?
I don't know.
Well,
well, I do know, but...
Did you want to fill everybody in or should we just leave it at that? Well, listen, we've got a diverse population here. We work with a lot of diverse clients. All of them have different financial goals and needs. And basically, we have to tailor investment strategies to meet their particular circumstances. But we also have to manage a service strategy that allows us to really understand what's important to them and to meet their needs. So for us, what we try to focus on is actively listening to our clients, understanding their financial aspirations, really get a handle on risk tolerance and not what they say, but try to understand how do people really feel about the possibility of losses, let's say in their investment portfolios and against the possibility of gains. Time horizons, all those things that go into crafting an investment plan that aligns with an individual's objectives.
See, I did know what service meant, but I wanted you to say it.
Oh, I appreciate that.
So I put you on the spot.
No problem.
Because it's not just about short-term gains, although that's what gets all of the hype, as I mentioned earlier. It's about building long-term relationships based on trust and transparency. And we had a fellow on here a couple of years ago now, a guy named Tim Noonan from Russell Investments, and he described trust as like oxygen. You just need it. All investors value integrity and honesty in their financial advisors, and service plays a crucial role in earning and maintaining that trust.
In fact, according to a recent survey by the...
Wait, a survey?
Did I say survey?
Yeah, you said survey.
Okay, well, let's make it a survey then. By the Investment Funds Institute of Canada, 86% of Canadian investors... And I mentioned that just because that's where the survey was done, believe that trust and transparency are essential qualities in their financial advisors. And actually, it takes me back. As I've mentioned, I've been in this business for a few years.
You just say the number.
I think it's 28 years.
You know exactly what
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Approximately. But on my very first week of training, we met with the CEO of our company, and he quoted, so this is going back long years and back to the mid-90s, and he quoted a survey back then that said the main reasons why investors stay with their financial advisors are because they like them and they trust them. And the main reasons why investors leave their financial advisors is because of lack of service, and generally not because of performance. So people care more about how they're treated and making sure that their needs are being met as opposed to strictly based on the quantitative numbers.
And you need the quantitative numbers to go along with it. As you say, those are the table stakes. You like to say that though.
I'm not much of a poker player, so it's nice to use poker analogies or statements here.
Yeah. But it underscores the importance of putting clients' interests first and providing them with the best possible service. And that's something that we strive to do all the time. And our hope is that in the work that we're doing in creating that service model, that service strategy, that we're actually elevating other advisors around us to improve the performance, not the performance, but
the view of the investment industry as a whole.
Yeah, just to improve the overall relationship for all.
Yeah, exactly. Service extends beyond individual clients, also to the broader community as well.
All investors are increasingly concerned about things that they're surrounded by, like headlines around, and we're not promoting or discounting any of these things, but things like climate change, social justice, corporate governance. And as investment professionals, we have a role to play in addressing these concerns through our investment decisions, whether we choose to include them or not.
There's been a huge jump in sustainable investing in Canada. This data goes back to 2020 sustainable investing assets.
Wait, I thought we weren't talking about 2020 anymore.
Oh, okay. It goes back a few years, maybe four, and sustainable assets in Canada reached about $3.2 trillion, which was up almost 50% from just 2 years earlier than that. And so there's a lot of growth in that area. It's got a lot of attention, the concept of sustainable investing. As advisors, we do need to be gatekeepers of sorts in this area, because part of the reason for the growth is there's been a lot of greenwashing. So just like a lot of trends, many people think if you slap a environmentally sensitive or sustainable investing label on something, they think it means it actually is. And you do need to dig below the surface to make sure that those types of investments are actually sustainable.
Well, it's like this podcast. It is organic.
That's right.
We have an org. But it is remarkable growth. It does show that investors are not only prioritizing financial returns, but also seeking to make a positive impact through their investments. Whether you believe in ESG and SRI or not, there is a big movement there.
And that's why service is so crucial in our profession. It's about more than just making money. It's about making a difference in the lives of our clients in terms of them reaching their goals, also the world around us.
So to all of our listeners, whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, remember the importance of service in the investment profession, because at the end of the day, it's not just about the bottom line. It's about the impact we can have on the world around us. And you still have to reach your bottom line. And that goes back to the why we link markets and returns to goals.
Let's discuss that a little bit. So let's discuss the link between the level of service and customer loyalty versus the rate of return in investment management.
Sure. Well, I mean, it is multifaceted is a word. That's a word, isn't it?
Sure.
Okay. The first one we would say customer satisfaction and loyalty. So a high level of service in investment management can lead to increased customer satisfaction and loyalty. Clients appreciate personalized attention, timely communication, transparency, which is super important, and responsiveness from their investment managers. And I mean, when people feel valued and well-served, they're more likely to remain loyal, just what you mentioned earlier, because they feel like somebody trusts them and they trust them back. So that leads into the next one, trust and confidence. So effective communication and proactive service helps build trust and confidence between the investment professional and the client. But clients are more likely to stay loyal to a firm they trust to manage their investments competently and ethically, and trust is a fundamental factor in maintaining long-term relationships in your marriage as well as in this world as well. So it's required.
Exactly.
And it does lead to referrals and either good or bad reputation, because satisfied clients are more likely to refer others to the investment professional, which leads to organic growth in the client base. And positive word of mouth referrals enhance the, the brand reputation and credibility, which attracts new clients and contributes to long-term success of the business.
I don't want it to make it sound like, well, this is so important because it's good for our business. It is good for our business, of course, but it's good for clients because there's a massive level of anxiety and stress if you're either not sure about your investment manager, not sure about the recommendations they're making, not confident that you're getting the best advice. And clients go through it when investment advisors leave the industry. They either retire or move on. And there's a massive level of stress that goes with that. It's like losing your doctor. By firms offering that kind of solid service to build loyalty, what you're also doing is you're reducing stress and anxiety for your clients, for investors, because they can relax and ideally work towards their plan without a lot of anxiety about what's going on in the markets or with your advisor.
They can rest and digest is a phrase I've heard before. And what you just said reminds me of is this analogy I've used before of getting on an airplane and you know you're going to get into a turbulent air for whatever reason. It's just known. And you look at the pilot in the seat and they're freshly minted out of flight school and you think, oh crap, this, or you get on the airplane and you see the person who's got 20,000 hours of flying through all kinds of things. Yeah. You just feel a little bit better.
Exactly. What was the name of the pilot who landed the plane on the Hudson River?
Oh, and this was just an anniversary not that long
ago. Yes, that's right. He's the guy you want in the pilot's chair. Other things related to that loyalty and customer service connection, the retention of assets under management. And so from the standpoint of the firm, obviously, if you have high levels of customer loyalty leading to client retention, that's crucial for the stability and growth of the firm. And the firm with a loyal client base is better positioned to weather market downturns and fluctuations. Also, it makes it easier for clients to consolidate their assets if they feel confident with the firm. They consolidate their assets, not only good for the firm, but good for clients because it makes for a more simple and a financial situation.
Well, we tend to get a majority of our referrals during times of extreme volatility. And I think it's because people gauge the level of advice they're getting during like a global financial crisis or maybe something called a pandemic. You might remember this back in...
We don't mention that year, right?
Well, hindsight is 2020. Okay. But it's during those times when we do tend to get more referrals than not. And I think it's because we have a very consistent message in the way that we manage money and also in the way we deliver the information.
And so getting now to the next point, performance and returns, which we talked about earlier. I mean, while the level of service influences customer loyalty, ultimately investment performance and returns do play a significant role in maintaining that loyalty. Because clients expect their investment managers to achieve competitive returns relative to the market and relative to their stated investment objectives. And so delivering reasonable investment performance is essential for retaining the client trust and loyalty over the long term. Earlier, we called it table stakes or just the cost of being in business. That's to be expected. Again, I don't think you need to have the very top quantitative performance of anybody out there. It needs to be reasonable so that people can have a positive investment experience over a long period of time.
I've brought this person up before, but I want to bring her up again. Kathy Woods, ARK Innovation ETF, during that year that we are not supposed to mention, hindsight is 2020, her fund went up tremendously, had great returns, and as a result, gathered a lot of investment assets as people were chasing those returns. And since then, that particular investment fund is down, 70% or something, and has had massive fund flows out. So performance can lead people to chase returns, but if it's not maintained, it will lead to people exiting if that's the only reason they were in it.
A part of providing good customer service and sound investment management means understanding returns. If you look at why returns are happening and why what I would call excess returns are occurring, you need to understand where. For instance, we had some discussion about looking at the various stock markets around the world, and Denmark had one of the best performing stock markets for the last several years. Does that mean we should invest in Denmark stock market specifically? Not really, because as we dug through it, we found out that that was all the result of one company, Novo Nordisk, which made the very popular weight loss drugs, Ozempic and Wegovy. And so if you took that one stock out, the Danish stock market was no better than any other.
Which is actually the same as the S&P 500, really, right now. You got the Magnificent Seven that had a majority of the returns last year. But if you took them out, then you had still good returns, but it wasn't as high.
Part of our job is to be able to explain returns, explain what's happening in the market, understand them, and help clients understand that. The last thing is the value proposition. I mean, the combination of excellent service and competitive investment performance basically forms the overall value proposition for clients. Firms that effectively balance both aspects of that tend to have a higher level of customer satisfaction, loyalty, better retention rates. And again, with the most important thing there being the customer satisfaction, which I talked about. While the level of service is crucial for fostering customer loyalty in our business, investment management, it's got to be complemented by reasonable investment performance to sustain loyalty over a long period of time. That's what clients or investors are looking for. A combination of excellent service, trust, transparency, and reasonable returns in order to remain loyal and committed to the firm.
Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit about relative versus absolute return. Something that's come up a lot in the last 6 months, because 6 months ago, the markets, that being the bond market and the stock market in this case, all had negative returns. And we had lots of people that were looking at the absolute return and saying, you know, my portfolio is down 10 or 12%, which nobody likes to see, no matter how happy they are with the service you're giving, Greg.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe with you, people would look past it, but with others, they wouldn't. They'd question it. But that's the absolute return. And when you looked at it on a relative basis, well, how did their investments do compared to the benchmarks? They actually were performing better than the benchmarks, but they still had negative returns. So there is a difference between relative and absolute return. And this is evident when we have bull markets and portfolios are lagging the return rates in the equity markets, but also during bear markets, like I just mentioned, when portfolios are not being as negatively impacted, because our portfolios are built around specific asset allocation strategies based on what you just mentioned above, I should say before or prior, not above, but it's your risk tolerance, time horizon, what kind of goals you have that you want to achieve, et cetera. So I'll just talk about relative return and then maybe you talk about absolute return. So the relative return is a relative return measures the performance of an investment compared to a benchmark or a similar investment strategy. That's really important. Here's an example. If you have all equities in your tax-free savings account and you have all bonds in your RRSP account, and you say, geez, my tax-free savings account is doing so much better than my RRSP. And you say, well, yeah, because the equity market's up and you have all equities in it. So you've got to have a relative return measure. So relative returns focuses on the difference in performance between the investment and the benchmark over a specific period of time. It's expressed as a percentage indicating the outperformance or underperformance relative to the benchmark, something that we would call alpha. Well, we don't call alpha. It's called alpha. And investors often use relative return to assess the skill of a fund manager in generating excess returns compared to the market or a designated benchmark. So relative return does not consider the actual gains or losses in monetary terms, but rather the performance relative to a specific reference point.
And the difference then between relative and absolute return is absolute return measures the actual gain or loss generated by an investment over a specified period of time, regardless of what's happening in the markets or other market performance, focuses solely on the net return achieved by the investment, irrespective of market conditions, and expressed as a percentage of a monetary value indicating the actual profit or loss realized by the investment. And so, listen, absolute returns are something that everybody wants. It would be awesome if we could just say, look, I'm going to achieve a 5 or 6% absolute return regardless of what's going on in the markets, whether the stock markets are rising or falling, whether the bond markets are rising and falling. The primary goal would be Well, I just want to preserve capital and achieve consistent growth over time, regardless of what's going on. And absolute return doesn't rely on comparing to benchmarks, but it looks at the investment's performance independently based on its own objectives and targets. And so, as I say, it's kind of what everybody would want. Not really anybody can't really guarantee. I mean, I guess in terms of things like if you go into a bank and buy a guaranteed investment certificate, or in the US, they're called certificates of deposit. I guess that would be an absolute return strategy, because if the bank promises to give you 4.5% over 5 years on that, I won't call it an investment, on that savings, well, that's an absolute return. The stock market could go up or down, and as long as the bank stays in business so they can give you back the money that you deposited with them, then you would earn your 4.5% every year for 5 years guaranteed.
Yeah, but the problem is if you had bought that 4.5% GIC at the end of 2023, you missed out on 11% rate of return or higher. So yeah, what's better?
That's where investors need to make their choice. And they do that by being well-educated on how the markets work and understanding volatility and that kind of thing. And the other thing is, when we talk about absolute returns, the stated goal and objective of most hedge funds is to provide a positive return regardless of market conditions. Okay, and they use a variety of strategies to try to accomplish that. As you and I were discussing yesterday over lunch, hedge funds absolutely do an incredible job of creating returns for the hedge fund managers, with many of America's top billionaires being hedge fund managers.
7 out of the 10 wealthiest people in the US are hedge fund managers. How did their investors do is my question.
Exactly. As the old book said, where are the investors' yachts?
Let's just wrap it up here. So in conclusion, we've kind of gone through a melting pot of information here, but it is all linked. 3 points for you. Number one, understand the difference between relative and absolute returns, which we just discussed, and how your portfolio is set up to deal with volatility through its asset allocation strategy. Very important. Asset allocation is thought to be the most critical decision you should make in your portfolio. Number two, market-like returns or slightly better are what is expected from clients, and it is what we expect to deliver as well. But risk and return are related. So you can't expect high returns with low risk or vice versa. And we've heard those examples, analogies many times over the years. That thing with low risk is giving 12% rate of return. It doesn't work that way. And lastly, number three, service is super important. Are you getting good advice would be a question. Are you dealing with someone that is helping you reach your goals? Or are they just relaying the daily results of the Dow Jones Industrial Average or the S&P 500? Because I see a lot of these people on news channels at the end of the day from various firms, and they're talking about the Dow did this, the S&P did that, the TSX did this, West Texas traded at that. Are they giving you actionable advice, or are they just telling you what happened on the day? I would say that's not service.
No, not at all.
But having worked with people to achieve a specific goal that's measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely, that is service.
You bet.
Okay, well, that was like me on my soapbox.
Well, excellent soapbox speech.
All right.
We'll catch you next time.
Next time.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by the CM Group. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing, or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to markets-work.com. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast. The CIBC logo and CIBC Private Wealth are registered trademarks of CIBC. If you are currently a CIBC Wood-Gundy client, please contact your investment advisor. CIBC Private Wealth consists of services provided by CIBC and its subsidiaries, including CIBC Wood-Gundy, a division of CIBC World Markets, Inc. CIBC Private Wealth is a registered trademark of CIBC used under license. Wood-Gundy is a registered trademark of CIBC World Markets, Inc. Colin Andrews and Greg Kaminsky are investment advisors with CIBC Wood-Gundy. This information, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. CIBC and CIBC World Markets, Inc., their affiliates, directors, officers, and employees may buy, sell, or hold a position in securities of a company mentioned herein, its affiliates, or subsidiaries, and may also perform financial advisory services, investment banking, or other services for or have lending or other credit relationships with the same. CIBC World Markets, Inc. and its representatives will receive sales commissions and or a spread between bid and ask prices if you purchase, sell, or hold the securities referred to above. CIBC World Markets, Inc. 2024.